Executive Wellness is sponsored by David and Paula Bouncer and OMO Construction.
Okay, good morning. This week we are learning Yevamos Daf Yud Beis. To give ourselves a bit of context in terms of what we've been in the middle of accomplishing in yesterday's Daf as well as this week's Daf. if you remember back on Daf Gimel, the Gemara had made an assumption in our Mishnah that our Mishnah says that there are 15 cases of arayos which are exempt from Yibum and their co-wives are exempt from Yibum as well. So if Reuben and Shimon are brothers and then Shimon dies and one of Shimon's wives was Reuben's brother was Reuben's daughter, for example, the Mishnah said that the daughter herself is exempt from Yibum, and the co-wife is also going to be exempt from Yibum. And there are 15 different cases, and the Gemara made a diuk, and it said that, oh, specifically these 15 cases, is there no Yibum for her or the co-wife, but there are some cases being excluded from our Mishnah. And the Gemara on Daf Gimel Amud Beis suggested four possibilities in terms of what the case may be that wasn't listed in our Mishnah, but perhaps is excluded from our Mishnah. The Gemara had four cases. One of them was Tsaras Sota. Another case was Tsaras Machzir Grushaso. A third case was Tsaras Islandis. And a fourth case was Tsaras Mima'enes. And the Gemara now currently is in the process of going through each of those four cases and deciding whether or not the person herself is exempt from Yibum, and perhaps even the co-wife is going to be exempt from Yibum as well. And so on Daf Yud Aleph, we spoke about the case of Tsaras Sota. So that's an example where Shimon's wife definitely commit adultery. So there we say perhaps that she's exempt from Yibum and the co-wife is also exempt from Yibum. On Yud Aleph Amud Beis, we spoke about last week, Tsaras Machzir Grushaso, that generally if a man marries a woman and they get divorced, so if they just figure things out then and they make amends, they can get married again. But if she married someone else in the interim, then we say no. We say that if she marries someone else and then gets divorced from that guy, he can't remarry that girl that he divorced. That would be against the halacha. That's the iser of machzir grushaso. And so perhaps we said in Yud Aleph Amud Beis that if Shimon has two wives, one of them is just a regular wife, and one of them was a machzir grushaso. One of them is a wife that he remarried against halacha. So then that was we spoke about last week, and we're going to continue this week about whether perhaps she is exempt from Yibum, and perhaps the co-wife is also going to be exempt from Yibum. The third case is Tsaras Mima'enes, we're going to speak about today on Daf Yud Beis, and the fourth case of Tsaras Islandis is going to be later on Daf Yud Beis and Amud Aleph. That's going to continue today's discussion, is going through these four cases where there isn't an erva per se, there's not a forbidden relationship, it's not that one of Shimon's wives is Reuven's daughter or his mother-in-law, none of that, it's just some other case where perhaps still we're going to say that she's exempt from Yibum, and the co-wife as well is going to be exempt from Yibum. And then when we turn the page to Yud Beis Amud Beis, we're going to discuss some interesting cases of contraception in halacha, as well as the ability for a minor female to have children. That's going to be the discussion later today. Very exciting stuff over there. So stay tuned. But for now, we're going to continue on the taf of Yud Beis Amud Aleph. And the good part about this is that it's literally just a copy and paste of the previous Amud. We already spoke about last week, Tsaras Machzir Grushaso, and we brought several proofs as to whether it's true that she's exempt from Yibum, and is her co-wife also exempt from Yibum? And now we're gonna really, the Gemara on the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Beis rephrase the question, and we're gonna bring those same exact proofs again this week. So again, just to review the case very quickly, Reuben and Shimon are brothers, and Shimon has two wives, one of which was a machzir grushaso. That's a woman which he had initially been married to. They got divorced. She married someone else, and then it didn't work out with them either. So now she's back on the market, and she's single again. He's not allowed to marry her again. And if he does, then he has violated an iser of machzir grushaso. And so if that case, one of Shimon's wives is a machzir grushaso, so what are the implications for Yibum? The Gemara asks in the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Beis, is she exempt from Yibum? And secondly, is the co-wife exempt from Yibum? So the Gemara begins on the very top of Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Amar Le, Tani Tua. It was taught, Haisa Achas Kashera V'Achas Pisula. Let's say you have a case where Shimon had two wives, and one was Kasher and one was Pasul. We'll define those in a second. Im Haya Choletz, Choletz L'Psula, V'im Haya Miyabeim, Miyabeim L'Kshera. Right, Reuven always has two options. He can either do Yibum to one of those wives, or he can do Chalitza to one of those wives, and then he's done. So if he decides, so one of these is kosher and one of these women is pasul, if he wants to do yibum to the kosher one. If you want to do chalitza to the pasul one. So Gemara says, what are we talking about over here? My kashera or my pasula? I lema kashera kashera la alma, psula psula la alma. If you'll say that kashera means that she's kashera la alma, which Rashi on Yad Aleph and Beis said means, now she's kosher to kahuna. A kohen is not allowed, a kohen hedjot, a regular kohen, is not allowed to marry a grusha, a woman who is divorced, or a chalutza, a woman who had done chalitza in her past. So that maybe we'll say kshera means that she's not a divorcee or a woman who had done chalitza, or she's, and pasul means that she is divorced or she is a chalutza, and she's pasul to kahuna. But then what's the difference? Why should it matter who I do chalitza or yibum to? Kivan diladidei chazya, right? He is just a Yisrael. It doesn't matter if she's pasul to a kohen or not, or kosher to a kohen. This guy's a Yisrael. He should be able to do yibum and chalitza to whoever he wants. My nafka leimina. What's the difference between who he does chalitza or yibum to? So it can't be talking about whether it's kosher to a kohen. Elalav kshera kshera lei, psula psula lei. Rather, when it says kosher and pasul, it doesn't mean to the world in regards to kahuna. It means to this guy particularly. Reuven himself, he specifically is, she's specifically pasul to him. Pasul invalidated to him in some way. Or, and she's specifically kosher, to him. Umay nihu, and what's that case? That case perhaps is machzir grushaso. Perhaps that's our case specifically. When one's kosher and one's pasul, that means that one of them is a regular girl, she's kosher, and one of them was a machzir grushaso. The katani imhaya miyabim miyabim l'kshera. And we see, if that's what it's talking about, well, look at what the halacha is. It says, if you want to do yibum to the kosher one. Whoa, we're talking about doing yibum to the co-wife of a machzir grushaso. So we see right there that you can't do yibum to the machzir grushaso herself, but you could do yibum to the co-wife. Although, the Gemara rejects this proof, no. Kshera la'alma, psula la'alma. Really, it means kasher to a kohen and pasul to a kohen. Would it call Marv, that which we asked, kevan til didei chazya, my naf kalemi, no? That which we asked, well, if he's a Yisrael, well, who cares if she's kasher to kahuna or pasul to kahuna? Mishum de Rav Yosef. The Amar of Yosef, Kana Shana Rebbe. Rebbe taught the following, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi taught the following on this Mishnah. Lo yishboch adam me boro va'acherim trichim lahem. If you have a cup of water and you're not thirsty, you shouldn't just spill it on the ground. You should give it to someone else. Maybe someone else wants it. So what does that mean for us? That means you have two girls here. One of these is able to go marry a Kohen. Her shidduch list is through the roof because she's mutter to Kohanim. And this other person is pasul. She's already not allowed to marry a Kohen. So right now, I have an option of doing chalitza to one of these two women. I don't have to do chalitza to both. The halacha is you just do chalitza to one and then you're done. It doesn't matter to me if I do chalitza to girl A and to girl B. But you know who it does matter to? It matters a lot to her because one of these women is a kasher. Right now she's allowed to marry a kohen. And if I pick her to do chalitza, I'm now making her into someone who's not allowed to marry a kohen. And that's not fair. That's not nice to her. It doesn't matter to me, but it matters to someone else. And that's why it says, if you're going to do chalitza to the one that's already pasul. Because right, chalitza makes someone pasul to kahuna. A person who had done chalitza cannot marry a kohen. So that's why it says, it's talking about kahuna, nothing to do with machzir grushaso, and it's just talking about just being a nice person. That, again, these are proofs we already had last week, but now that was the conclusion of rejection of proof number one. And now we're on to proof number two. The Gemara says, the first one in the line, Tashma, ha-machzir grushaso mishenises. Let's say you have a case of someone who remarried his divorcee after she had been married to someone else. He vitzarasa, hold that says. It says you do chalitza to her and the co-wife. The Gemara asks, he vitzarasa sagaraitach? That implies you have to do chalitza to two people. And that's never the halacha. You do chalitza to one and then you're done. What does it mean, do chalitza to her and the co-wife? Ela ema, ohi otsarasa. Rather, perhaps, you should read it as the following. You do chalitza either to her or to the co-wife. But that seems to say you can't do yibum to a machzir grushaso or her co-wife. All you should do is chalitza and get out of there. Doesn't that prove that there's no yibum for the co-wife of a machzir grushaso? The Gemara says no. V'lav terutze kametarastole. Right, remember, the wording of this braisa was fishy in the first place. So you had to finagle the wording and change around the wording to mean something else. So why reword it in a way that proves one thing about machzir grushaso? You can also reword it a different way. Taritzachi. And then explain the following. That he choletzes, that rather it should say that he choletzes, for her you do chalitza with, but tsarasa o choletzes o mesedemes. But for the co-wife of the machzir grushaso, you can even do yibum. You have the option of yibum or chalitza. So you can reread it in the following way and therefore conclude that there is going to be yibum for the co-wife of a machzir grushaso. So that's the Gemara's conclusion of the discussion of Tzaras Machzor Gushaso, and that's the conclusion of the Halacha that we say that you can't do Chalitz, you can't do Yibam with her, but you can do Chalibam, you can do Yibam to the co-wife of the Machzor Gushaso. So now we move on to the next case. Again, there are four cases that our Gemara is talking about in this general context of the Gemara. Yad Aleph, we spoke about Tzaras Sota. We just concluded Tzaras Machzor Gushaso. Now we begin the next one of Tzaras Mima Enes. For this one, we are going to use some diagrams to make sure that everything is super clear. So give me 1 second. Okay. There we go. So what's the case of Miyun? We had Miyun earlier in the Masechta, when we spoke about it on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, but let's review the case of Miyun. So generally, I want to make it that I can actually see people. Is that possible? I'll do that. There we go. Okay, so generally, if you want to get married to someone, then if you're a girl and you want to get married, so Mido Raisa, there are two ways of doing that. You can go ahead, and if you're an adult, you can go ahead and get married. That's what most people do. Or if you're a katana, if you're a minor, your father can marry you off. And that's Kiddush and Mido Raisa. Okay, but let's say she has no father, so she's going to sit there and be a 10-year-old girl who's just single and can't get married, right? So Chaval, so Chazal said, midirabanan, she's allowed to get married. There can be a kedushin. It's going to be a kedushin midirabanan, only a rabbinic kedushin, but then if she has no father, then her mother or her brothers can marry her off, and that's going to be a kedushin midirabanan. Alternatively, if she has a father, but her father already married her off to someone else, and then that didn't work out and she got divorced, or now she's single again for some other reason, so her father can't marry her off a second time. Once he already married her off once, he only has one shot at it. After that, she's no longer in his rishos. She's considered her own person. And now she can't marry herself off because she's still too young, but her father also can't marry her off if he already married her off once. So in that case as well, her brothers and mother can marry her off, and that's going to be a kedushin midirabanan. But there's one very important caveat, and that is the caveat of miyun. And that is that she can decide at any point to just walk away from the marriage and do miyun. And the miyun means that it uproots the marriage. It's as if she was never married in the first place. So when you brought this up in Gav Gimel Amud Beis, Morty Nissel made a very important point, which is that she's not even labeled a divorcee. Right? Typically, if you get divorced, you give someone a get, and now you're a divorcee, and you can't marry a kohen. But if you had only a kedushin midirabanan, that your brothers and she's a minor, that whose brothers and mother married her off, if she does miyun, she can walk away from the marriage, and it's as if she was never married in the first place. That's the concept of miyun. And now our Gemara is going to think about what are the implications, what are the yibum implications of this concept of miyun. So we're going to have the following case on the rightmost diagram, Tzaras Mima Enes Asura. So let's say Reuben and Shimon are brothers, and then Shimon dies, and he had two wives. One of them was a regular gedola wife, a regular adult, normal 20-year-old or whatever she was, and the other one was a katana. She was a minor. She was like 10 years old. And then Shimon dies. So at that point, so if Shimon was alive, she could have always just done miyun with Shimon, with her husband, but now Shimon's dead. But there's a machlokas. Base Hillel holds that she is still allowed to do miyun even after her husband dies. She can do miyun with a brother. So she didn't do miyun with Shimon, with her father, with her husband rather, but she could do miyun with Reuven, with the brother who wants to go ahead and who wants to do either Yibam or Chalitza. That brother can also go ahead and do miyun, and that's totally fine. And the halacha is, however, that once Reuven does miyun to that katana, he's now forbidden to that katana. Which is an interesting halacha, because if you think about it, Maker Hadin, as we said, miyun makes it as if she was never married to Shimon in the first place. That marriage never even happened. So why should Reuven be forbidden to this girl? This girl isn't it's not his brother's wife, right? She was never married to his brother. I don't know what you're talking about. What marriage? I did miyun. It never happened. But still, there's a gzera midirabanan. The Rabbanan made a decree that he's still not allowed to marry that wife, because it looks a little fishy. You're right that after the fact, after Shimon died, she uprooted the marriage. marriage, but it still, it looks a lot like Shimon's wife, and he did something, he did miyun to sever any yibum connection that he had to her, right? If you do yibum to your brother's wife, that's totally mutter. But to marry your brother's wife in a non-yibum situation, and without the mitzvah of yibum allowing it, it's forbidden to marry your brother's wife. So what does it look like to an outsider? Reuven goes ahead to one of Shimon's wives, he does some act, which we know to be miyun, but everyone just sees he did some act to cut ties with that woman, and then he goes and marries her? That's just marrying your brother's wife without the mitzvah of yibum. That's a big problem. So in reality, she did miyun, she was never married to that brother. She uprooted the marriage, but to an outsider, it's kind of like Marisayan, it looks a little fishy, and therefore Reuven himself, the one who did miyun, is going to be prohibited to marry that Kitana wife that he did miyun with. That's the concept of miyun. But now we're going to extend that to co-wives. The Gemara says, the first one on the line is Misya Vemes. It says, Amar Rav Lili Bar Mamal Amar Mar Ukva Amar Shmuel Tsaras Mima Enes Asura. Not only is the Mima Enes, the one who did miyun, she's Usur to Reuven, who she did miyun with, but the co-wife of the Mima Enes is also Usur. The Gemara asks Laman, what are we talking about? Who is that Koeif Aser to? Ilema le'achim. Maybe it's not referring to Reuven himself, but it's referring to another brother. So if you look at this in the middle diagram, where there isn't just Reuven, but there's Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, and then Shimon dies. So Reuven does miyun, but we're not talking about if Reuven can marry the co-wife. Maybe we're talking about if Levi, if another brother, is allowed to marry the co-wife, right, the Gedola wife that Shimon had. But that can't be the question. The Gemara continues. Hashta hi gufa sharya. But she herself, the Mima Enes, the Katana who did miyun, she herself is permitted to Levi. The Amar Shmuel miyana bezeh muteres bezeh. Because Shmuel holds that yes, if Reuven, you do miyun to the Katana, then you, Reuven, are prohibited to that Katana. But all the other brothers, like Levi, are permitted to that Katana who had done miyun. So if she herself is permitted, then Sarasa mi bai? Right? The whole concept of co-wives is that, oh, Shimon had two wives. One of them is usher to me. But not only is she going to be exempt from Yibum, but even the co-wife is exempt from Yibum. But for those other brothers, like Levi, the Katana herself is mutter to Levi. So then, of course, the co-wife should be mutter as well. So that can't be the question. That can't be what we're talking about when we say Tsaras Mema Enes Asura. So the Gemara says, Ella Lady Day. It must be talking about Reuven himself. That may be Reuven. So he personally is forbidden to the Mema Enes, the girl that the Katana that he did, miyun to. And then Shmuel says, not only is he going to be forbidden to her, the Katana he did miyun to, but he's even going to be forbidden to the co-wife, the Gedola wife that Shimon had. Even she's going to be Asura to him, which we're going to have to explain because, again, as we said, miyun uproots the marriage. It's really as if that Katana was never married to Shimon. But we have some dinim midrabanan that the rabbi said that we have to make it that he's going to be Asura to her because it looks fishy, as we're going to explain in the following lines of Gemara. So perhaps that's what it means. Reuven can't marry the girl he did miyun to, and he also can't marry any of the co-wives. They're also going to be exempt from Yibum and therefore prohibited to him. Umayshna, but the Gemara asks, but that's strange, because Umayshna mima enes de sharya le'achin de lo avda behu maisa. Saranami lo avda be maisa. The Gemara says, what should be the difference between, think about Levi and the girl who did miyun herself. Why is Levi, this brother who wasn't involved in miyun, why is he allowed to marry that Katana? Why is that Katana mutter to him? Because de lo avdi behu maisa. Because he didn't do miyun. Only the brother who does miyun, like Reuven in our example, is prohibited to the Katana. But all the other brothers are permitted to that Katana. Why? Because he didn't do miyun. Only if you do miyun to someone is there a reason for the Rabbanan to say that you should be prohibited to her. But just like Levi is permitted to the Katana because he didn't do miyun to her, so to Reuven. Yes, he did miyun to the Katana, but he didn't do anything to that co-wife. So why should that co-wife be prohibited? That co-wife should be mutter to Reuven. So Gemara answers the reason why is Gzera Mishum Tsaras Bito Mima Enes. That yes, you're right, Meikar Hadin, he should be permitted to her, but it's a Gzera Midrabanan. The rabbis decree that it should be prohibited because of the case. Sometimes it's going to be a case of Tsaras Bito Mima Enes. So now look at the diagram all the way on the left. Let's say that girl, that Reuven, Shimon has two wives and one of them is a Katana, and that Katana is also Reuven's daughter. And in that case, Reuben goes ahead and does miyun to that katana. So in that case, there, it makes logical sense to say that the co-wife should be prohibited. Because after all, we know from our Mishnah that Saras Bito is Asura. If Shimon has two wives, and one of them is Reuben's daughter, so not only is Reuben exempt from Yibum with the daughter, but he's also exempt from Yibum with the co-wife. That's the halacha of Saras Bito, which we had in our Mishnah all the way on back on Daf Beis. So of course, if one of them is his daughter, of course we should say that the co-wife is Asur. And so therefore, in all cases where he does miyun with a girl, we're going to say in all cases he's going to be Asur. He's prohibited to marry the co-wife. Since in the case where he does miyun, where that katana is his daughter, it's prohibited to marry the co-wife. So too, in all cases, we're going to say that it's prohibited to marry the co-wife. It's a gzera atu, that case of Taras Bito Mema Enes, that we say that all cases of Taras Mema Enes, Reuven is not only going to be Asur to the katana, but he's also going to be Asur to the co-wife of that katana. The Gemara asks, Vitzaras Bito Mima Enes Miyazira. In that case, what you just spoke about, when Reuven does Miyan to the katana, but that katana was actually his own daughter, is it actually going to be Asur in that case? The Hatna, but it says in our Mishnah, Vikulan Emesu Omianu. And the Bach adds, O Niskarshu, we also add in our Mishnah, Tsarosehen Mutaros. So our Mishnah had said, as we've been talking about, Shimon has two wives, and one of them is an erva to Reuven. For example, it's Reuven's daughter. So then our Mishnah says, Reuven is exempt from Yibum with the daughter, and he's also exempt from Yibum with the co-wife. But then the Mishnah says, but let's say that daughter died before Shimon dies. That daughter died, or she got divorced. In that case, that daughter's out of the picture. So if that daughter, that wife of Shimon, is out of the picture for some reason, she was the problematic one. So if you can get rid of the problematic daughter, the problematic wife of Shimon, then the co-wife is going to be mutter to Reuven. So again, so if Shimon has two wives, one is Reuven's daughter, and one is just another girl. So generally, we say that not only can Reuven not do Yibam with the daughter, but he also can't do Yibam with the co-wife. But let's say that daughter died before Shimon dies, that daughter died. Or perhaps that daughter divorced Shimon. Then of course we're going to say that Reuven is mutter. He's allowed to marry the co-wife, because it's not a co-wife of his daughter, because she's not married. That daughter isn't married to Shimon anymore. And it also adds in, oh, Mianu, that it says if that daughter did Mion, that's also a case where the co-wife is going to be mutter. So Mark continues, de Miana biman. What's the case? Who did she do Mion to? Ilema de Miana biba'al. If it's talking about a case where she did Mion to Shimon himself. So her husband Shimon, before her husband dies, she does Mion. It's as if she was never married to Shimon. If that's the case, but then Hainu Grusha, that's the same thing as the case where she divorces, like a regular case of an adult who divorces Shimon. So what would be the need to say that, oh, if Reuven's daughter, if one of Shimon's wives is Reuven's daughter, and then Reuven's daughter gets divorced, or she does Miyun, in both of those cases, the co-wife is Mutter, what's the need to even talk about two cases of Gerushin and Miyun, of divorce or doing Miyun? Those seem to be the same exact thing. Hainu Grusha, Mion is essentially the same thing as getting divorced. So what we need to teach that? Elala biyavam. It must be that no, she didn't do Mion with her husband Shimon. She did Mion with the Yavam, with Reuven. And that's when our Mishnah says that Saras Mema Enes is Mutter. That in that case, the co-wife is Mutter. So doesn't it seem explicit in our Mishnah that if Reuven does Mion to his daughter, to, again, Shimon has two wives, and one of them is a katana, which is Reuven's daughter. In that case, doesn't our Mishnah say that if Reuven does miyun to the daughter, that he's going to be mutter to the co-wife? So how could our Gemara say that Saras Mema Enes Asura, if our Mishnah seems to say that Saras Mema Enes is mutter? The Gemara answers, lo, li'olam biba'al. Really, it's not talking about Reuven doing miyun to his daughter. It's talking about Shimon, her actual husband doing miyun. Before Shimon dies, he did miyun. That's the case of our Mishnah. And that which we get asked, isn't that the same thing as Gerushin? The Gemara answers, v'trei gavne Gerushin. There are two types of Gerushin that are listed in our Mishnah, and we have no problem teaching a case of Gerushin as well as a case of miyun. They're similar, but they're also different enough to warrant a separate an individualized mention in our Mishnah. The Gemara now hints to a point which we had already mentioned earlier. This is going to finish the talk of Taras Bama Enes, and then we're going to wrap it up. Right, we say in general, if a katana is married off midirabanan to someone, her brothers and mother marry her off, we say miyun uproots the marriage, it's as if she was never married. So kimiyana biyavam nami nisuin kamoi ka'akra. If she does miyun to the yavam, she does miyun to Reuven, shouldn't that also uproot the marriage? And she should be mutter to everybody. Why is she usher to anyone? You say, oh, she's usher because Reuven can't marry his brother's wife, and this is his brother's wife. No, it's not his brother's wife. She did miyun. She uprooted that marriage. She erased that marriage off the books. So the Gemara says that there's a difference. Mishum detani Rami Bar Yecheskel. Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel. Miyana beba'al muteres le'aviv. The Gemara has the following case, which is similar to our cases, but now it's talking about Shimon's father. If you look at this, the diagram all the way on the left. So Shimon is married to a katana, and he does miyun to that. So he's married to a katana midirabanan, meaning her mother and brothers had married her to Shimon. And then Shimon does miyun, and that uproots the marriage. Then she's mutter to Shimon's father. Because after all, usually, you can't marry your son's daughter, that's your daughter-in-law, that's a prohibition, that's an erva. But if she does miyun, miyun uproots the marriage. She's no longer your daughter-in-law because that marriage never happened. I don't know what you're talking about. What marriage? I did miyun. So miyana beba'al muteres la'aviv. But biyavam, if the yavam, the brother, does miyun, then asura la'aviv. So in that diagram all the way on the right, where Shimon is married to a katana, midirabanan, and then Shimon dies, right? If Shimon did miyun, then yes, Shimon's father is mutter to that wife. But let's say Shimon dies, and he didn't do miyun, but Reuven, Shimon's brother, does miyun, and doesn't that also uproot the marriage? Yeah, but still we say that Shimon's father is going to be prohibited to that wife. Why? Bemara says, v'yavam asura la'aviv, that if the yavam, the brother, does miyun, the father is going to be prohibited to that wife. Alma, Mishas, Nefila, Nirias, Kekalaso. Why is that prohibited? Right, as we said, Miyun erases the marriage off the books. So if Shimon does Miyun, if Reuven does Miyun to this katana, either way, it's as if that katana was never married to Shimon. And so shouldn't Shimon's father be allowed to marry that girl? That's not my daughter-in-law. She was never married to my son. That they did Miyun, or she did Miyun with the brother, and that erases that marriage off the books. But we say no, because Mishas Nefila Nerias Kekalaso. From the moment that Shimon died, stop and look at what we have. Shimon died and he left behind a wife. So yes, later on, Miyun was done by someone else, but it still looks a lot like Shimon's father. It looks like a daughter-in-law to Shimon's father. Even though Miyun was done later, there's a Gzera Midrabanan, kind of like Maris Ayin, it looks a little fishy to go ahead and marry one of Shimon's wives, if you're Shimon's father. And based on that also, Hachanami, so too in our case, Mishas Nefila Neres Kitzares Vito. In our case, it looks a lot, if Reuven can't marry that katana, because it looks a lot like he's marrying the co-wife of his daughter. So in our case, where it was Reuven's daughter was the one who had done Miyun, Shimon had two wives and one is Reuven's daughter. So yes, that daughter did Miyun, it's as if she was never married to Shimon, but it looks a lot like the co-wife of a daughter, and that's why it's going to be prohibited. So that concludes the discussion of Tzaras Bima Enes. And so just to conclude with what we've said. So we said, if Reuven, Shimon has two wives, one of them is a katana. If Reuven does miyun to that katana, Reuven is prohibited to that katana, and he's also prohibited to the co-wife of that katana. Why is he prohibited to the co-wife? Doesn't miyun uproot the marriage? He should be mutter to everybody? Yeah, but there's some xeros midirabanan to make it look not so sketchy, and we say that he shouldn't marry her or the co-wife, and it's a xera atu the case of where, let's say that katana had been his daughter. So there you would definitely say he can't marry the co-wife. So too in all cases when he does miyun with a katana, with the katana wife from Shimon, he's not allowed to marry the co-wife either. The Gemara now continues to the next case of Tzaras Ailanis. Amar Abasi, Tzaras Ailanis Asura. Reuven and Shimon are brothers, and Shimon has two wives, and one of those wives is an Ailanis, which we're going to define right now. What's an Ailanis? An Ailanis is a woman who is unable to have children. As Rashi says, she's like an Ayal. Ayal is Lashon, is a Zachar, a male ram. She's a female, but she's like a male in that she can't have children. In that case, if she's an islandess, she can't have kids, then Reuven is going to be exempt from Yibam with her, as well as the co-wife. Why? Why is Alanis isn't, it's not an erva, it's not like Reuben's daughter, it's not like a Reuben's mother-in-law. Why is an Alanis exempt from Yibum? The Gemara says the pasuk, Shenemar, the Hayah HaBechor Asher Teled Prat Le'Alanis. Should have clarified where we are, just in case anyone lost the place. We are three lines up from the skinny lines, towards the end of the skinny lines, through the third to last skinny line of Yud Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, "Shenemar v'hayah bechor asher teled prat le'ailanis she'ene yoledes." The Torah describes the mitzvah of Yibum, and it says, "Yes, Reuven, your brother dies, and he left behind a wife. But go ahead, there's a mitzvah of Yibum. Go and marry one of Shimon's wives, and it'll be great because you'll be able to perpetuate the legacy of Shimon. Yes, Shimon died, but you'll marry one of his wives, and you'll have a child, and that child is going to maintain Shimon's legacy even after his death." So the Torah describes, you're going to marry this girl for Yibum, and she's going to have a child. But an islandess can't have children. So if one of Shimon's wives is an islandess who's unable to have children, then you are exempt from doing Yibum with her. What about the co-wife? Why is the co-wife going to be usher? So Rashi explains, once you can't do Yibum to the islandess herself because of the pasuk, because she can't have children, so now what's left is this girl who you can't do the mitzvah of Yibum to, and she's your brother's wife, which generally not allowed to marry your brother's wife. And so that's kind of like an erva. It is an erva to marry your brother's wife. Usually the mitzvah of Yibum permits it, that you're allowed to marry your brother's wife. But here, there's a pasuk saying you can't marry the islandess. So what you fall back to the Eishes Ach, she has the status of your brother's wife, and that's an erva. And therefore, the co-wife is going to be considered a tsaras erva. And that's how Rashi explains why the tsaras islandess is going to be usher, according to Ravasi. The Gemara asks the following. Masiv Rav Sheshes. Shlosha achin nisuin shalosh nashim nachrios. This is the diagram all the way on the left of the screen. You have three brothers married to three girls, and they're not sisters. In the past cases of brothers marrying sisters, that's not the case over here. It's a little simpler. You have three brothers who are married to three girls. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are each married to a girl, and those girls are nachrios. Nachrios doesn't mean that they're not Jewish. It means that they are not related. They're not sisters. Umeis echad mehem. And then one of those brothers dies. So let's say Reuven dies. And then Va'asa Basheni Maimer. And then Shimon does Maimer to Reuven's wife. What's Maimer? So generally, we know if someone wants to get married, there are two steps to marriage. There's Kiddushin and there's Nisuin. Kiddushin is like the engagement step, and then Nisuin is the full-on marriage. By Yibum, you don't really have that. On a Torah level, there's no two steps to Yibum. It's just you go ahead and you do Yibum, and you have Bia with the Yavama, and you're considered married. That's a full Nisuin. But Migdur Rabbanon, there is a Kiddushin you can do. If you don't want to fully commit right away, so you just do Kiddushin Migdur Rabbanon. That's a Kiddushin Migdur Rabbanon, a rabbinic Kiddushin called Maimer. So in this case, so again, we have three brothers, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven dies. So once Reuven dies, Reuven's wife is now on the market for Yibum. There are two brothers, Shimon and Levi, who can do Yibum to that wife. But no one does Yibum. Instead, Shimon does Maimer. He does a Kiddushin Midrabanan to Reuven's wife after Reuven dies. And then the Gemara continues, Vames. And then Shimon also dies. So now you have Reuven died. Shimon does Maimer to Reuven's wife, and then Shimon dies also. So you have Reuven's wife, which is also kind of Shimon's wife, and you also have Shimon's full wife from before. Both of those are now open for Yibum to the third brother, Levi. So in that case, the Gemara says, Hare Elu Choltzos Velo Misyabmos. You should do Chalitza, but you cannot do Yibum to either of those two wives. Why not? What's the problem? The Gemara says, Shenemar Umeis Echad Mehem Yivama Yavo Aleha. The Pasuk says, when talking about Yibum, it says, one brother dies, then you should do Yibum. When do you do Yibum? When one brother dying caused that Yibum scenario. Misha Allaha Zikas Yavam Echad. Only when one brother's death is creating a Zika, a Yibum connection over here. The Lo Zikas Shnei Yavamin. We're going to call this case, this is the case of Zikas Shnei Yavamin. When there are two Yibum connections, two brothers dying caused a Yibum connection over here. Because think about Reuven's wife. When Reuven died, that created a connection for Yibum. And when Shimon dies, that also creates a connection for Yibum. Right, think about this brother, Levi, over here. Once these two brothers die, Levi has an option to do Yibum with either of Reuven's wife or Shimon's wife. But think about that first wife. That first wife falls to Levi for Yibum because of Reuven, because Reuven was fully married to her. But he also falls to Levi for Yibum because she was also quasi-married to Shimon. She had a Kiddushin Derabbanan to Shimon. And that's a unique thing. The Torah only says to do Yibum when one brother's death causes the Yibum situation, the Yibum connection. But if two brothers die and cause a Yibum connection, Reuven died and he was fully married to that girl. Shimon died and he was Midirabbanan married, had a Midirabbanan Kiddushin to that girl. So both of their deaths are causing that wife to fall to Levi for Yibum. That is not going to be a case where you should do Yibum. Based on this pasuk, it's not a drasha midoraisa, it's just an asmachta midorabanan that they say based on the pasuk, the rabbis say that you should not do Yibum in this case. This is a case of zikas shenei yevamin. So, this is supposed to be somehow a question to Tzaras Islandis. So what does that have to do with Islandis? The Gemara says, V'katani Allah. We're now in the second wide line of Yud Beis Amid Aleph. V'katani Allah. On that, the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yosef, Zohi Tzaras Eishes Ach Me'av She'iser Nefila Garamla. Right, this is a case of Tzaras Eishes Ach. The reason why, right, so we explained why that first wife, she's exempt from Yibum to Levi because she has two brothers' death tied to her. And that is there's a pasuk saying, only when one brother's death is tied to that girl do we say to do Yibum, but if two brothers dying are causing a Yibum connection to that girl, then you should not do Yibum. And then the next step is, once you can't do Yibum to her, so she's like an erva, she's like Tzaras Eishes Ach, and therefore she's your brother's wife and you can't marry her, therefore you also can't marry the co-wife. It's like our Mishnah where you can't do Yibum to one girl, you also can't do Yibum to the co-wife. The Gemara says, wow, Zohi Tzaras Eishes Ach Me'av She'isr Nefilim Garamla. The Gemara says, wow, Rav Yosef says, what a unique case where you have a case where you can't do Yibum with a girl, with one woman or the co-wife, and there isn't even an erva over here. This isn't Ruain's daughter or the names are different over in this case. It's not like it's someone's daughter or someone's mother-in-law or someone's wife's sister or their mother-in-law's mother. It's none of that. There's no erva over here. It's just the fact that people died. That created a situation, an exemption from Yibum. What a unique case, the Gemara says. Shalom atzidu b'chol ha-Torah kula kegonzos. There's no case in the Torah like this where someone's death simply creates an exemption from Yibum, even though there's no erva over here. There's no forbidden relationships. This isn't anyone's daughter or anyone's mother-in-law. This is just a regular case of people dying, and that creates it. Mervin says, you don't even have a case like this in the Torah, because even this case is only a case midirabbanan. Only midirabbanan do we say you should not do Yibum in this case. But the Gemara is going crazy about how, well, what a unique case we found, where you don't do Yibum with the woman or the co-wife, even though there are no arayos here. There's not anyone's daughter or anyone's mother-in-law, etc., etc. Gemara asks, Zohi lemute mai. What do you mean this is a unique case? What's that coming to exclude? My love lemute tsaras islandis desharya? Right, what about Tzaras Islandis? Tzaras Islandis also is a case where there isn't any erva over here. This isn't Reuben's daughter. It's just a regular case where that woman happens to not have the ability to have children. And we said that you shouldn't do Yibum with her or the co-wife. But here we're saying, wow, what a unique case we found of this case of Zika Shnei Yevamin, where you don't do Yibum even though there are no Arayos over here. What about Tzaras Islandis? Doesn't that imply that this Mishnah that we just quoted holds that Tzaras Islandis is not an example where there's an exemption from Yibum? Doesn't it mean that Tzaras Islandis is Sharia? The Mara says, no, Lemute Tzaras Islandis de Asira. Really, Tzaras Islandis is Asir. But still, when was being excluded as well. So what does that mean? Oh, my Zohi. What was the exclusion? Zohi de Isra Nefila Garamla Tzarasa Baya Chalitza. This is a unique case where there are no Arayos, and you're exempt from Yibam, but you still need to do Chalitza. Right, again, Yibum is to go ahead and marry the surviving wife. Chalitza is to cut ties and to not marry the surviving wife. In this case of the Zika Shnei Yevamim, it's unique because there's no erva, but there is still a need to do chalitza. But Islandis is different. Afilu chalitza lo baya. Not comparable to Islandis, because the case of Islandis, not only is she exempt from Yibum, and the Kohen is exempt from Yibum, but they're all even exempt from chalitza. You don't have to do any Yibum or chalitza whatsoever. What's the difference? Igmar asks, my time on. Hadaraisa hadarabanan. The distinction is that by Islandis, we have a pasuk. The Torah says don't do Yibum with her. And we extend it to the co-wife as well. And that's why if the Torah says no yibum, then don't do anything. No yibum, no chalitza, you're good to go. But if it's only a din derabanan, the case of zika shnei yevamim, again, yes, we quoted a pasuk, but that's only an asmachta that the rabanan found the pasuk after the fact, but it's not a core din deoraisa from that pasuk. So in that case, it's only midrabanan. If the rabbis say don't do yibum, you should probably play it safe and do chalitza still. But the case of Alanis, that's different, because that's a case where the Torah says don't do yibum. If the Torah says don't do yibum, don't worry about yibum or chalitza either. So that's the Gemara's explanation as to why there's no question over here from this case of the case of Zikas Shnei Yevamim. An interesting question that the Rishonim ask is that the Gemara gets all fed up about how, wow, the Gemara says that this case of Zikas Shnei Yevamim is so unique because it's a case where there's no Erva and still is an exemption from Yibum. And we're asking that, oh, doesn't that seem, what about the case of Tzaras Islandis? Why couldn't the Gemara also ask this question about the Tzaras Mema'enes, or Tzaras Machzir Gushaso, or Tzaras Sota, aren't those, we've been teaching four different cases over here, all cases of where there's no erva and still an exemption from Yibum. So why does the Gemara specifically ask this question by Tzaras Islandis and say, oh, it says that Zika Shnei Yevamim is the only case of an exemption from Yibum with no erva? What about Tzaras Islandis? What about Tzaras Machzir Gushaso? What about Tzaras Mema'enes? What about Tzaras Sota? All of these different cases are cases of where there's an exemption from Yibum without a actual erva present. So that's dealt by Tosvos. Tosvos over here in Divya Maschil, my love, the Mutitaras Island is the Sharia, as well as Tosvos Yeshanim, literally right next to Tosvos on the Daf, as well as Tosvos Arash in the back, basically explaining that those cases, it has to be similar to the case of Zika Shnei Yevamim to be excluded. We're not going to spend time on the details, but only cases that are comparable to Zika Shnei Yevamim, because you make that deal, you can say that, oh, it says only this case is a case of an exemption from Yibum without Erva, as opposed to Islandis, but it doesn't make sense to say that this is excluding Matzer Grushaso or Tara Sota, because Tosfos deals with how those cases are not even comparable. It's not even in the same Parsha as this case of Zika Shnei Yevamim. Something to think about. The Gemara continues now, third to last line, Tanan. But our Mishnah says, Vikulan emesu o mianu o niskarshu o shenimtsu islandis tarosehan mutaros. Remember, our Mishnah says, Reuben and Shimon are brothers, and Shimon dies, and he leaves behind two wives, one of which was Reuben's daughter. So in that case, Reuben is exempt from Yibum with the daughter and exempt from Yibum with the co-wife. But then the Mishnah says, which we've already said earlier, that's why I'm saying it so fast, let's say Reuben's daughter dies, or let's say Reuben's daughter gets divorced, then Reuben's the co-wife isn't the co-wife of Reuben's daughter, because they're not co-wives. Reuben's daughter is out of the picture, because she got divorced, or what she did mian, as we spoke about earlier. And it adds, Shenimtsu Islandis. If we find out that Reuben's daughter was an Islandis, so then that means that the co-wife is going to be mutter. Doesn't that seem to say explicitly that Tzaras Islandis is muteres? The co-wife, not only are you exempt from Yibum with an Islandis, but even a co-wife of an Islandis? Mara says, Lo kasha kan shehikirba, kan shelo hikirba. When our Mishnah says that if we find out that she's an Islandis, then the co-wife is mutter, that's talking about a case when Shimon didn't even know that she was an Islandis. So think about it. Shimon's married to this woman. He married her thinking that she's able to have children. And then after Shimon dies, we find out actually she was an Islandis the whole time. She's unable to have children. So the Rashi explains that is a mekachtos, that he married her with an improper assumption. He didn't realize some important detail about her. And that means that the whole marriage is like it never happened. And that's why our Mishnah says that the co-wife is going to be mutter, because that islandess, we just found out she was an islandess for the first time. And therefore, it's as if she was never even married to Shimon, because Shimon didn't know that. Maybe he wouldn't, we can assume perhaps for Shimon's sake, the assumption that we make is he wouldn't necessarily have married her if he knew that he was an islandess. So when we find out the case of Shelo Hikirba, that's when we say that she herself is exempt from Yibum, or she's out of the picture because she's an islandess, and the co-wife is going to be mutter for Yibum because that islandess was never even in the, that was never in the picture. But we're talking about Shehikirba. Shimon knew that she was an islandess. There's no Mekach Talos over here that he didn't realize, and therefore the marriage never happened. No, and in that case, that's when we say Tzaras Islandis is going to be Asura. And the Gemara says, Dekanami, Dektani Shenimtsu, Belokatani Shehayu, Shmamina. Our Mishnah doesn't say that she was an islandess. It says Shenimtsu. We just discovered. We just found out that she was an islandess. So that sounds like the case is Reuven didn't know that she was an islandess, and that's why we say it's Mutter to marry the co-wife. Because that islandess, it's like she was never married to Yibum. It was like she was never married to Shimon. And in that case, Tzaras Alanis is going to be mutter. But in our case of Hikirba, we're going to say Tzaras Alanis is going to be Asura. The Gemara now wraps up this discussion of these four cases of Tzarasota, Mafsir Gushaso, Mima Enes, and Alanis, and concludes what the bottom line halacha is going to be. The very second to last words on Yud Beis Amud Aleph, Amar Rava. Tafi Yud Beis Amud Beis. Hilchasa, Tzaras Alanis, Muteres. The halacha is that the co-wife of an Alanis is mutter. Va'afilu hikirba. Even if Shimon knew, so against what we were just saying a second ago, even if Shimon knew that she was an Alanis, still, if she was an Alanis, she is exempt from Yibum, and the co-wife is exempt from Yibum as well. Va'afilu tzaras bito Alanis. Mara adds one more step. Even if the Alanis that we're talking about over here is a daughter to Reuven, it's Reuven's daughter. Because think about it, usually we say, if Shimon has two wives, and one of them is Reuven's daughter, then the daughter is exempt from Yibum, and the co-wife is exempt from Yibum. But now we add, if that daughter is an Alanis, then we say that we default to the Alanis rule, that the co-wife of an Alanis is mutter. So this woman, one of Shimon's wives, has two statuses. She's a daughter, an Erva, and she's an Alanis. A daughter, we say that the co-wife is Aser. An Alanis, we say the co-wife is mutter. And when you have this girl who's both a Bito and an Alanis is what trumps out. The fact that she's an Alanis is what we focus on, and therefore we say that the co-wife is going to be permitted, because in general the halacha is that Tzaras Alanis is mutter. So even a case of Bito Alanis. Ella Hadik Tani Shenimtsu. Our Mishnah says Nimtsu. Doesn't it sound like our Mishnah is talking about a case of where it was Lo Hikirba, where he didn't know that she was an Alanis? No, Tani Shehayu. Rather, it should read Shehayu, that she was an Alanis. But yes, Shimon may have known or may not have known. Either way, the case of an Alanis is going to be completely mutter. So that concludes the discussion of the Gemara of these four cases, which we spoke about on Yud Aleph and now on Yud Beis. And today we spoke about Tzaras Mafsir Gushaso and Tzaras Mima Enes, as well as Tzaras Alanis. And we seem to conclude that by Tzaras Alanis, she herself was exempt from Yibum, but the co-wife is still going to be mutter to Yibum. By Mima Enes, we said no, she's exempt from Yibum, the co-wife is also exempt from Yibum. But by Alanis, we say that she herself is exempt from Yibum, but the co-wife is going to be mutter for Yibum. We now turn to some very interesting Gemara, which is a very important Gemara in regards to the topic of contraception in Halacha. The Gemara now begins. We are 6 lines down from Yud Beis Amud Beis, second word in the line, Tani Rav Bibi Kamei de Rav Nachman. Just to introduce, we're going to bring a question over here on our Mishnah. This is a completely new discussion. It's a question on our Mishnah. We're going to show in a second how our Mishnah seems to say that a minor is physically incapable of having children. And this following brayso we're going to quote seems to imply the opposite, that a minor does have the ability to have children. As it says in the following case, Tani Rav Bibi Kameder of Nachman, Shalosh Nashim Mishamshos Bemoch. 3 women are allowed to use a moch. What's a moch? A moch is some piece of fabric which the woman inserts inside of herself before having relations with her husband in order to prevent herself from getting pregnant. So these 3 women use a moch. Which are these 3 women? Ketana, Meuberes, Umeinika. A ketana, a woman who is a minor. We're going to describe in a second what ages is considered a ketana. Meuberes, a woman who is already pregnant. And menika, a woman who is nursing. All these people can use a contraceptive called a moch to prevent getting pregnant. Why? What's the reason? Ketana, shema tesaber. The reason for a ketana is because maybe she's going to get pregnant. Vishema tamos. If she gets pregnant, she may die. There's a possibility that she may die. Now, I think I look at that wording. It sounds like she won't necessarily die, but a ketana, a minor who gets pregnant, might die. That's going to be the focus of our question. Our Mishnah seems to say that a ketana cannot have kids. She's going to always die if she tries to have children. But here it says that a ketana may or may not, there's a possibility that she may die. And for that reason, she should use this contraceptive to make sure she does not get pregnant. Second case, meuberes, a woman who's already pregnant. Why does she use a moch? Shema tase ubra sando. As Rashi explains, the concern is that if she's already pregnant, she already has 1 fetus inside of her. If she gets pregnant again, which the Gemara assumes can happen, according to Rashi, then the concern is that she's going to create another fetus, and that fetus is going to push against the other fetus that's inside of her. It's going to deform the first fetus, or one's going to deform the other, and therefore she should, and it's going to cause us problems. That's what the Gemara refers to as sandal, the deformation of the fetus, and therefore we say she should not, she should use a contraceptive, because it's dangerous for a girl, for a woman who's already pregnant, to become pregnant again. Tosos already asks on this, what are you talking about? A woman can't become pregnant twice. Once you're pregnant, you can't become pregnant again. Tosos is clever, thinking of a different explanation, which is also difficult scientifically, but that's for another discussion. But the Gemara explains, for a meuberes shema tase ubra sandal. If she's already pregnant, it's dangerous for her to become pregnant again. Meinika, a woman who's nursing, why does she use a moch? Because for her, it's also dangerous to become pregnant. Because shema tigmol bina v'yamos. Maybe she's currently nursing a living child, and if she starts to get pregnant, then it's going to diminish her milk supply, and she's going to have to wean her child off of her. She's going to have less food to support her live child, and that's going to cause that child, rachman aleflan, to pass away as well. So for all of these cases, there's a risk involved with getting pregnant, and therefore you should use a contraceptive to make sure you don't get pregnant. The Ezawi Katana, what's this case of a Katana? Mi bas yid alef shana v'yom echad ad yid beis shana v'yom echad. A Katana is a minor who's between ages 11 and 12. Pachos mikain the yeser al kain, if she's under 11 or she's greater than 12, mishameshes kedarka v'holeches divir Rav Meir. There's no risk if she's under 11 or greater than 12. Under 11, she won't even become pregnant, there's no concern. Greater than 12, she can become pregnant, but she's not going to die as part of the process. So in that case, we're going to say that she's allowed, she does not need to use a moch, because there's no risk involved. The Chachamim omrim, achas zu v'achas zu, mishameshes kedarka v'holeches. Either any of these cases, whether she's younger or if she's in that age group where she may die, still she does not have to use a moch. Why? Hashem will protect her. Mishum she'ne'amar shomer pesayim Hashem. The pasuk says Hashem protects the simple or the foolish. This topic is a very interesting one that comes up lahalacha as well. The concept of shomer pesayim Hashem. What the concept generally is understood to mean that we shouldn't take on things that are risky. Generally, we should not enter into a case of sakana. But sometimes, if people don't view this as a sakana, then sometimes we say that you're allowed to go enter that risky situation and rely on the fact that Hashem will protect you. Chazal say several places, dashu barabim. If it's something that the masses do, then you can go ahead and do it also. Yes, it's a little risky, but you can rely on Hashem to protect you. Rav Moshe has a very famous tshuva in Igros Moshe, Yoredeya Chelik Beis Simen Memtes, where he discusses smoking. He was asked, is it usher to smoke? Is one allowed to smoke, or is it prohibited to smoke? And he says, I wouldn't recommend it, because it's addictive. Anything addictive, you should probably avoid. But Rav Moshe says in that tshuva, written in 1964, that I can't say it's prohibited to smoke, because dashu barabim, everyone does it. It's like eating and drinking, smoking. Everyone smokes, and therefore you can rely on shomer pesayim Hashem. Hashem's going to protect you. You can go ahead and smoke. Yes, it's dangerous. It's a little dangerous, but Hashem's going to protect you. That's the tshuva Rav Moshe has. He also says, if someone asks you for a lighter, is that lifnei iver, because you're allowing them to violate an issur? He says, no. Someone asks for a light, you can give them a lighter. Many contemporary poskim, including Rav Moshe's own children, Rav David Feinstein, has clarified, Rav Moshe would most likely not say that nowadays. If we knew about the dangers of smoking, if he knew, right, nowadays it's not even dashu barav necessarily. It's not as common as it was in the 60s. You don't have smoking rooms in every single restaurant in town like they used to be in the 60s. I wasn't alive in the 60s, but that's my assumption of the 60s. So maybe back then, Rav Moshe says that it's considered dashu barav, everyone smokes, you can rely on that. Shomer Pasad Hashem will protect you, but many say that would not apply nowadays. A very applicable case, literally, these days, in coronavirus. I saw Rav Asher Weiss, he's a posek, contemporary posek in Eretz Yisrael. He's a Rav of Shaarei Tzedek, he's a posek of Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. He was asked, can one rely on I guess this is like a few months ago when like not everyone was taking the whole mask thing seriously. He was asked, can we just go outside without masks? Can we just all learn in yeshiva and not rely and assume Hashem will protect us? Shomer pesayim Hashem. Hashem protects the foolish. Yes, it's risky, but maybe we can rely on Hashem to protect us. Rav Asher Weiss quoted a very interesting tshuva from the Trumas Hadeshen in Siman Reish Yud Aleph, where he says a very different spin on how we understand Shomer pesayim Hashem. It's not as we were saying that it's not a heter. It's not that you can go do risky things because Hashem's going to protect you. I know it's risky, but I can do it anyway because Hashem's just going to protect me. No. The Trumas Hadeshen says, Shomer Basayim Hashem means you'll have some people who do things that are risky, but they themselves don't know that it's risky. And they not rely on, but the facts are Hashem will protect those who are in the dark, who don't know of the risks, but they go ahead and do it anyway. Hashem's going to protect them. But if you know better, if you're a smart guy, you know that it's risky. You know the risks of coronavirus. You can't just say, oh, I rely on Hashem to protect me. I'm going to walk into a risky situation and Hashem's going to protect me. Only if you don't know does that protection exist. Not if you are aware of the risks. Those are some applications, lemaisa, or smoking is really not so lemaisa, of Shomer Basayim Hashem. So over here, the Chachamim say, yes, it's risky for a katana, a pregnant woman, a nursing woman, to get pregnant again, but they can just have regular relations with their husbands and rely on the fact of Shomer Basayim Hashem. Hashem will protect them. There's also one more, very quickly, there's a very important Tosfos over here, Tav Tosfos, Shalosh Nashim Mesham Shos Bemoch, where Tosfos and Rashi have a three-way machlokes. They have a machlokes on three different ideas regarding this case. Firstly, when it says that these three women use a moch, does that mean these three women use a moch, that they are allowed to use a moch, or that they have to use a moch? Rashi says, these three women are allowed to use a moch, which would imply only these three can use this contraceptive because it's risky for them, it's very dangerous, but everyone else cannot, is prohibited from using a moch. Tosfos say no, it's that these three women have a risk and therefore they're obligated to use a moch. Second machlokes, Rashi, this, the nature of this moch. Rashi says that the moch, this contraceptive, this piece of fabric is inserted in the woman before Tashmish, before she has relations. It's supposed to catch the semen. That's the goal of this contraceptive. And Tosfos say, no, this moch we're talking about is in place after Tashmish. She uses it to clean herself out after having relations with her husband. That's how the contraceptive works. A third machlokes, Rashi Tosfos, is a more abstract one about the prohibition of Ashchas HaZera. When we say there's a prohibition of wasting seed, that is only for men, perhaps. Tosfos say, only men who have the mitzvah of Puruvu, the mitzvah to have children, they have the prohibition of wasting zera. But women who are not obligated in Puruvu, they would not have this prohibition of Ashchas HaZera. Rashi says, no, that even women have this prohibition. It's very interesting Tosfos to look at, that Tosfos and Yibbeis Medbeis, the top Tosfos of Shalosh Nashim, Mesham Shos Tamoch, but let's get going before we run out of time. So the Gemara now says a question on us. This case says, let's get back in the Gemara. The Gemara says, and smack in the middle, the first one on the line is Shene Amar, the Shomer Psalm Hashem. The Gemara now asks, Mida Kamar Shema Tesaber Veshema Tamos. It says if a katana gets pregnant, she might die, which implies that she won't necessarily die. There's a possibility that she may die. If so, you can have a case of a mother-in-law who can do mia. So what? Vitnan, it says in our Mishnah, Iatayacho lomar bechamoso ve'em chamoso ve'em chamov shenimtzu islandis o sheminu. Our Mishnah essentially says, this line we've been quoting earlier about if the one of the wives does miyun, then the co-wife is going to be mutter. The Mishnah says you can't have a case of a mother-in-law doing miyun. Why does the Mishnah say that? Presumably because miyun is for a minor. Miyun is for a katana. But if she's my mother-in-law, she must be a gedola, because a katana can't have children. That's the assumption of our Mishnah. So our Mishnah assumes a katana can't have children. That's why I can't have a case of my mother-in-law doing miyun. If my mother-in-law, she must not be a katana. Miyun must be off the table. But here it says, Shema Tamus, a katana may or may not die. So a katana could have children, so I should be able to have the case of a mother-in-law doing miyun. The Gemara responds, Ema Shema Tesaber Vitamus. The Gemara says, never mind. When we said that you should use a moch because you may die, it meant you should use a moch because she's definitely going to die. The Amar Rabba Bar Levi, Gevul Yeshla. There's a certain boundary for a woman. Kod HaMazman Hazeh, Ein HaMetzaber Et Kol Iker. Under the age 11, she won't become pregnant. Toch HaZman Hazeh, He Mesa Ve'ubra Meis. Between 11 and 12, if she gets pregnant, she's going to die, and the fetus is going to die. But La'achar HaZman Hazeh, He Chaya Ve'ubra Chai. After 12, she can get pregnant, and she's going to live, and the fetus is going to live as well. So that's how we want to answer our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that a minor can't have children, and over here also, it also means that a minor cannot have children. If she tries to have kids, she's going to die. The Gemara asks, Inni, is that so? Va'atani Rabba Bar Shmuel, Iatayacho lomar bechamoso ve'em chamoso ve'em chamov shenimtzu u'aylanis, o shemienu shekivar yaladu. Rabbi Bar Shmuel quotes that line of our Mishnah, but he has two extra words. And he says, why can't my mother-in-law do Mion? I would have said she can't do Mion because she must be a Gedola, Shekevar Gadlu. She's a Gedola can't do Mion. But what does this Brisa say? Shekevar Yaldu. She can't do Mion because she has children. It sounds like she's not a Gedola yet. If she was a Gedola, it would just say she can't do Mion because she's above age 12. Above age 12, you can't do Mion anymore. But it doesn't say that. It says, Shekvar Yaladu. It sounds like she is still a child. She's still a minor, and she's had children, and that's why Mion is off the table. Which we're going to explain in a second, why that should make Mion off the table. But it seems from here that a minor could have children. And therefore the Gemara returns, Elali Olam. Four lines down from Yabez and Mabez. Elali Olam, Shema Tisaber v'Shema Tamus. Rather, what we said initially by the Moch, that a katana is a possibility if she gets pregnant, she might die, but she won't necessarily die. The Ela Kasha Hach, and the question that we had, doesn't our Mishnah say, I can't have a case of my mother-in-law doing Mion? Isn't that assuming it's because a katana can't have children? No, Amar Rav Safra, Banim Harehem Kisimanim. We can answer our Mishnah based on the rule of Rav Safra, that Banim Harehem Kisimanim. Simanim refers to the signs of puberty in a male or female. In regards to a male or female, there is the year requirement of becoming above age 12 for a girl, and then also there's also the simanim nairus. She has to have shtei sairos. She has to have two pubic hairs, and that is a sign of her having reached puberty. But Rav Safra says, forget the sairos. If she has children, that's enough of a sign for me. That's a sign that she's already reached puberty. And that's how we can explain our Mishnah. Why? Our Mishnah says, I can't have a case of a mother-in-law doing Mion. Why? We thought it's because Mion is only until age 12, and you can't have a case where you had children before age 12. That's impossible. Now we're saying, no, you're right. You could have children before age 12. Between 11 and 12 is that sweet spot where you are not necessarily going to die if you have children. And so it's possible. But still, she's under 12 and still can't do Mion anymore. Why isn't Mion allowed for any katana? Yeah, but once she's had kids, so it's possible for her to be my mother-in-law, right? I married her daughter, so clearly she had kids already, but she had kids under 12, but still Mion is off the table because banim harehem kesimanim. Once you've had children, that makes you halakhically like an adult, and therefore you can no longer do Mion. That's how we explain, everyone assumes that a katana, a minor, could have children, and our Mishnah still has a case of where a mother-in-law cannot do Mion because she already had kids. Once you have kids, that says that you can no longer do Mion because that makes you halakhically considered an adult. The mark concludes, Ve'ista Amri, Banim Adifi Me Simanim. Some say not only are kids like Simanim, like having Shtei Sairos, having the two hairs, it's even better. L'may Nafkamina, what do you mean it's even better? Da filu the Rabbi Yehuda the Amar Ach Yirbe Hashachor Bibanim Mode. Rabbi Yehuda has a unique shita by Cyrus. I guess that the two isn't enough. She has to have a lot of pubic hairs to be considered an adult halakhically, but whole agree that children is enough. Children make it that she's considered an adult halakhically. That's what banim is adifi mesimanim meant. That Rabbi Yehuda generally has a strict requirement regarding the cyrus, regarding the hairs, but having kids, you can avoid that chumra of Rabbi Yehuda once you've had children. You're halachically considered an adult. So what have we spoken about today? We began concluding the portion of our Gemara dealing with those four cases of Tzaras Sota and Tzaras Machzer Grushaso. That was on Yud Aleph. And today we continued Machzer Grushaso and spoke about Tzaras Mima Enes, when one of those wives did Mion, and Tzaras Islandis, when one of those wives is unable to have children, that perhaps in that case, just like she is exempt from Yibum, the co-wife is also exempt from Yibum. And then the Gemara sidetracked to this interesting discussion about contraceptives of Shalosh Nashim Meshamshos Bemoch. Doesn't that seem to say that a minor is able to have children? Doesn't our Mishnah assume that a minor cannot have children? And we said, yes, that case of Nashim Meshamshos Bemoch does say that between 11 and 12, a minor could have children, but our Mishnah also can be interpreted in a way where it also assumes that a minor is able to have children. We're going to continue this discussion next week on Daf Yud Gimel. Thanks everyone for joining.